Hi, this is Betty, and I'm reading from the News Gazette for Friday, September 11th. And let's just get this out of the way. The Restore Illinois Phase 4, Day 78. And some of the numbers for the state and locally for the COVID-19. Illinois has 255,643 cases and 8,242 deaths. Champaign County has 3,064 cases and 20 deaths. Douglas County has 250 cases with 5 deaths. Ford County has 120 cases with 4 deaths. And Piatt County has 110 cases and no deaths. Vermilion has 405 cases and 4 deaths. And the Illinois impact, a couple of blurbs. The 7-day positivity rate on campus fell below 1% after Tuesday's 11,621 new tests and 81 new cases were added. The expansion of testing through the U of I's saliva-based program to other state campuses could take another 6 to 8 weeks, but will depend on the FDA and manufacturing of equipment, Governor J.B. Pritzker said Thursday. So that's just the short of the Illinois impact on the COVID-19. On the front page of the News Gazette today, it says, Customer, Value Check Store is a Blessing by Deborah Pressey. But the store is to close. Getting to the grocery store for Aja Gibson of Champaign requires a bus ride with her 2 young sons and pulling a rolling suitcase to hold her groceries on the trip back home. Her grocery of choice has been Value Check, and she was disappointed to learn that the Champaign store's last day in business will be September 19th. Gibson was at Value Check early Thursday afternoon after getting off the bus by Schnucks Grocery on North Mattis Avenue and walking to the nearby Value Check at 1914 Glen Park Drive. She said she's been shopping at Value Check since it opened because it's convenient and the prices are a little cheaper. It's a blessing to have, she said, I can feed my children. There is a combination of reasons that went into the decision to close the store, but that concept and that location wasn't doing well, said Jerry Kettler, spokesman for the store's owner, Quincy-based Neiman Foods. The company will be considering what to do next with the property, Kettler said. I don't know what it resonated as well as it hoped it would, he said, of the Value Check concept. This gives us the opportunity to look at that area and figure out what we want to do to meet consumer needs. Under the Value Check concept, customers purchase each item at Neiman Food costs plus 10%, with the 10% added at the cash register when they check out, Kettler said. Neiman Foods has 2 Value Check stores, with the other one in Pekin set to remain open. Neiman Foods is probably best known as the operator of County Market groceries in the Champaign-Urbana area, but it also operates the Save-A-Lot grocery in Urbana, the Pet Supplies Plus in Champaign, 2 Ace Hardware stores in Champaign, both Haymakers convenience stores in Champaign, and the chain's newer upscale grocery, Harvest Market. A new Harvest Market is set to open in Springfield in November. Champaign's been great to us, and making these kinds of decisions is never easy, he said about Value Check's upcoming closing. The main concern was making sure employees at Value Check would have jobs. With everything going on, we have enough employment needs in the area that we were able to have jobs for everybody. Linda Lewis of Champaign, who was also shopping at Value Check Thursday, said she's shopped at the location since it was County Market. which Neiman Foods replaced with a value check in 2016. She preferred the store as a county market, she said, but I come here because it's convenient. She already knows one place she'll likely be shopping in the future. The giant food and general merchandise retailer set to open at Marketplace Mall in late October. I got a card for Costco, Lewis said. And right beside that article on value check is a picture of the inside of a Costco. And it says, Costco on schedule for opening on October 22nd. Ahead of Costco's October 22nd opening, City of Champaign employees were given a tour Thursday. The membership club warehouse will open at the site of the former Bergner's, which was torn down at Marketplace Mall. There's still a ways to go, but they're right on schedule, Champaign Planning and Development Director Bruce Knight said. It's going to be a state-of-the-art store, and they'll start stocking on September 22nd. City officials were told that Costco would be hiring 180 new people to work the store, which the city gave a $2.75 million sales tax reimbursement deal over 10 years. In recent weeks, Costco has set up tents around town to sign people up for membership. And that article was also by Ben Zichterman. Another article on the front page of the News Gazette is Chancellor Encouraged by Enforcement Results, and this is by Ben Zichterman. At Thursday's trustee meeting, Chancellor Robert Jones expressed optimism that the enhanced COVID-19 enforcement measures announced last week appear to be working. He said the number of new cases and the percent of tests that come back positive have been decreasing. After reporting 230 new cases on August 31st, a week into the semester, daily case counts have been below 100 from September 5th through 9th. The 7-day average positivity rate also dipped below 1% on Tuesday, the first time since August 31st. After the number of cases on campus exceeded expectations, Jones announced last Wednesday that the Urbana campus would go into 2 weeks of enhanced enforcement of COVID-19 violations and strongly encourage students to limit going out to essential activities. The U of I also launched a new effort to contact students within 30 minutes of testing positive, as some who did were avoiding contact tracers and not staying isolated. It seems to be working in a very fine way, Jones said. Board Chairman Don Edwards said the U of I's efforts are being closely watched. I've got notes from the governor, notes from the mayor of Chicago, notes from other trustees around the country, all commending the University of Illinois for its leadership in the fight against COVID-19 in the higher ed world. That is not to say that we won't have challenges in managing the virus, and we already have in Champaign. To deliver results more quickly, the U of I is letting employees and grad students move to once-a-week testing, as more than 95% of new cases are among undergraduates. Some undergraduates at a higher risk of COVID-19 will be moved to 3 times a week testing. The U of I is also trying to reduce the number of tests that have come back with invalid or inconclusive results, which can happen if food or other particles are in the saliva sample. Less than 2% of the saliva samples have come back inconclusive, and less than 2.5% have been invalid. It's important to note that we're doing something that's never been done before, so we have to expect some challenges. We are moving to a smaller test tube with a straw for saliva collection, and we are optimistic that it will help reduce those percentages. She also said that asking people to not eat, drink, smoke, use mouthwash, or brush their teeth for at least an hour before testing has helped reduce the number of invalid tests. The U of I originally advised waiting 30 minutes. In university housing, there are currently 118 students with the coronavirus in isolation and 26 with possible exposure being quarantined, Kaler said, and 300 isolation and quarantine beds are still available. More than 80% of the cases on campus are asymptomatic, said Ewa Vad, Deputy Administrator and Epidemiologist at the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District. Most of others have very mild symptoms, he said Wednesday, and none of three COVID-19-related hospitalizations in the county are U of I-related. See also on the front page of the News Gazette, we have Republicans outline charge against Madigan, and this is by Peter Hancock from the news at CapitalNewsIllinois.com. Out of Springfield, Republicans in the Illinois House on Thursday unveiled a single charge they hope to bring against Democratic House Speaker Michael Madigan, accusing him of conduct unbecoming to a legislator or which constitutes a breach of public trust. House Minority Leader Jim Durkin, Republican from Western Springs, introduced that charge during the first day of hearings of a special investigative committee that is looking into Madigan's role in a bribery and extortion scheme involving utility giant Commonwealth Edison. As was stated earlier, this is a unique proceeding. It has only been invoked once, and that was back in 2012, Durkin said, referring to hearings that led to the expulsion of former Representative Derek Smith, who was then under a federal indictment for an accepting $7,000 bribe from a confidential informant in exchange for legislative favors. But unlike the Smith case, Madigan so far has not been charged with any crime, and he has strenuously denied engaging in any wrongdoing, a fact that Democrats on the six-member panel pointed out repeatedly. This case is unique to previous special investigating committees in that the member that is subject of the petition has not been accused by federal prosecutors of any criminal activity, Committee Chairman Emmanuel Chris Welch, Democrat from Hillside, said at the outset of the meeting. Madigan was implicated in the scheme when officials at ComEd entered a deferred prosecution agreement in July with the U.S. Attorney's Office of the Northern District in Chicago. In that agreement, the company admitted that over a period of years, it awarded lobbying jobs and contracts to close associates of Madigan in an effort to win his favor for legislation that benefited the company. Although Madigan has not been charged with a crime, U.S. Attorney John Losh has said there is an ongoing investigation into the matter, and his office has issued a subpoena to Madigan's office for documents and records of communication related to efforts to secure jobs at ComEd or its parent company, Exelon, for several named individuals. So the charge is based on criminal activity that has not been charged, Representative Natalie Manley, Democrat of Joliet, said about the charge being considered by the committee. But Ron Safer, an attorney and former federal prosecutor who is working with the House Republicans, said the deferred prosecution agreement contains evidence that is stronger than a criminal charge. The deferred prosecution agreement contains actual evidence, actual admissions by Commonwealth Edison, agreed to by the United States of America. That is quite different and more substantial than a mere charge. Safer also noted that the committee's job is not to determine whether Madigan committed a crime, but whether he engaged in conduct unbecoming to a legislator of which constitutes a breach of public trust. Welch noted the same thing in his opening remarks. This is a political process, not a legal proceeding. We are not in a court of law. As such, this committee is not bound by traditional rules of evidence. However, we are bound to adhere to the rules of decorum. In addition to the formal charge, Republicans also said they are seeking voluntary witnesses to testify and produce documents. Those include Madigan himself and several people mentioned in the U.S. Attorney's subpoena. Among those are Michael McLean, a ComEd lobbyist who has been a close confidant of Madigan, as well as Fidel Marquez, a former high-ranking ComEd official who was charged last week with conspiracy to commit bribery, and former ComEd CEO Ann Pregimigliore. The committee adjourned without setting a date for its next meeting. Welch said he and the ranking Republican member, Representative Tom Demmer of Dixon, first need to consult with the U.S. Attorney's Office in order to avoid interfering with the ongoing federal investigation. Durkin noted that was the same process used in the case of former Representative Smith in 2012, as well as the impeachment proceedings against former Governor Rod Blagojevich in 2009. And now we go to the second section of the paper called Our County. And the first article is going to be listening sessions plan for input on future of policing. And this is by Mary Schenck. The city of Champaign plans to enlist input from the community about what policing should look like at a series of listening sessions scheduled later this month and next. The community is our best partner, and it's important our neighbors have the opportunity to voice their thoughts and expectations around policing directly to the city to help guide our future works as public servants, said Police Chief Anthony Cobb. This is unquestionably an important time in our country, and identifying a path forward so we can all be proud of begins with listening, learning, and working together. We are committed to growing and strengthening the bonds of trust between law enforcement and our community through empathy, mutual understanding, and education. To help in this endeavor, we hope to hear from many in our community during the listening sessions. Information gathered from 5 sessions will be shared with City Council members to guide them in public safety policy decisions that address the needs, interests, and values of Champaign. Because of the pandemic, the sessions will be held electronically using Zoom. On hand, each of the sessions will be Cobb, other police command staff, city manager Dorothy David, and elected officials. The listening sessions will be led by a moderator. The sessions have been scheduled for Thursday, September 24th, 6 to 8 p.m., Tuesday, September 29th, 6 to 8 p.m., Saturday, October 3rd, 1 to 3 p.m. Friday, October 9th, 1 to 3 p.m. And lastly, Tuesday, October 13th, 6 to 8 p.m. Everyone is welcome to attend and provide comments during any of the Zoom sessions, which will also be available for live viewing on CGTV, Comcast and i3 Broadband Channel 5, and on UVerse Channel 99, and live streamed on the city's website, champaignil.gov/CGTV. Each session will be recorded and available for future on-demand viewing on the city's website. Following a brief introduction, each session will be dedicated to listening to the public's input and suggestions for how to improve policing. Details on how to join and participate in the Zoom meetings will be posted at champagneil.gov/community-conversations prior to the listening sessions. Following the listening sessions, the city will invite community members to have additional in-depth discussions in more conversational study circles. Information regarding those, including how to register, will be announced in the coming weeks. A report based on the listening sessions and study circles will be compiled and shared with the council, which will also have a study session on the feedback in the future. Okay, election 2020, what they said, and this is the first round of forum face-offs. Miss round one of Champaign County virtual candidate forums on Zoom. Here are a few highlights from staff writer Ben Zigterman. And this is on the coroner's position. And this is Chandra Bishop, who's a Democrat. This is her position and her comments. Chandra Bishop, who works with local health departments through the United Way, wants the coroner to be an active partner in public health initiatives. Especially in these times, this job requires someone who is simply determined to help people live, which is why I want to bring my public health experience to the coroner's office. We deserve a coroner who does more than just the minimum. Your coroner shouldn't just determine the cause of death. They should proactively work to prevent it. This is Dwayne Northrup's views, and he is a Republican. Dwayne, who appeared in voice only, is running on his experience as coroner since he was first elected in 2004. I am deeply concerned about what would happen if someone with absolutely no knowledge or experience nor understanding of how to conduct death investigations were to be elected coroner. My top priorities, if reelected, are to complete the creation and rollout of a computer program I've been working with to assist with tracking and reporting useful data related to death investigations. And the next office is the recorder's office. And the first views are by Mike Ingram. Champaign County Board Mike Ingram, Democrat, is running on a platform of getting rid of the recorder position and putting its responsibilities in the county clerk's office. Illinois has 102 counties, and of these, more than 86 have no recorder or are in the process of phasing that office out of their budget. Red counties and blue counties all agree. It is a position of the past, and the staff that is doing great work in that office would be better off without an overpaid elected official heading their office. I'm tired of partisans who profess to be for smaller government unless it impacts a job they'd like to keep. And this is from the Republican, Mark Sheldon. Incumbent recorder Mark Sheldon, Republican, also favors the job no longer being decided by an election, but still wants it to be continue as an appointed position. I'm happy to be the candidate that wants to continue this office in a way that maintains the security and integrity of the documents. The efficiency that we've established and the good professional service that we've established, if we consolidate this office, we're going to bring an end to these types of advances. There's no way to reduce the staff in the office by 20%. And still expect the same level of professionalism and service out of the office. The next office is the treasurer's office. And the first views are by Cassandra Johnson, Democrat. Retired U.S. Army Master Sergeant Cassandra Johnson said reconciling the treasurer's books would be priority number one. We're working at a disadvantage without knowing really that all of the transactions that needed to be made have been made. Aside from that, I do believe that there are other things that we can be doing as a treasurer's office that can help long-term for the community. And this is by opinion is, or views, by Ted Meyer, who's the Republican candidate. Ted Meyer, a Sedoras trustee with a background in business analysis and technology, said getting the books back on track is needed for the county board, auditor, and taxing bodies to operate. In order to get that done, we're going to need to not only look at the books and get them straight, but we also need to work on the technology that's supplying those books and supplying that information. Getting far behind has been a big problem. And the next county position is the auditor. And Gary Maxwell, the Republican, is running on the county GOP's platform of replacing the recorder, auditor, and treasurer with a nonpartisan chief financial administrator. I'm running to help restore confidence in the financial affairs of Champaign County. The auditor, the treasurer, and even the county executive are part of the financial system. That team has failed us. It's more pronounced in the treasurer's office, but the entire team needs to be replaced. And the incumbent is George Dennis, a Democrat, in his views. The incumbent CPA, George Dennis, Democrat, said that his office took over some of the duties of the treasurer's office and stayed under budget after Laurel Prussing stepped down in January. I've stepped in to perform the treasurer's bank reconciliations, and I'm still under budget with that out of scope duty. In this office, competence resides with CPAs and you, the voters. Obtain one without giving away your civic duty and rights to some murky appointment process. And that was the first round of forums face-off on the candidates for those positions. See, we have Top of the Morning by Bob Asmussen. Gracie and Charlie Dukes are in rare air when it comes to marriages. The Dukes will celebrate their 71st wedding anniversary on Thursday. Friends and relatives are putting together a card shower for the happy couple. They are asking people to send cards and notes to Charlie and Gracie Dukes, Autumn Fields, Room 115, 316 East 14th Street, Tilton, 61832. Charlie Dukes, 97, has an amazing story, one he told often over the years to Ray Elliott's students at Urbana High School. During World War II, Charlie was captured by the Germans and spent 9 months in a POW camp near the Polish border. He got away, but later spent 2 months in a Russian detention camp before reaching the safety of the Allied lines. Charlie made his way back to Illinois. For years, he shared his harrowing experiences at schools and service clubs. He put it all down in a memoir, Good Morning, But the Nightmares Never End. If it seems like a great idea for a movie, it might be. Joe Hampton, an Urbana native and screenwriter, is working on a film script. Stay tuned. And remember, the cards and notes for the Dukes, family and friends suggest you open with Good Morning, which references promises Charlie made to God if he survived his ordeal. So that is the first half of the reading for September 11th for the News Gazette on this Friday.